Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Project Egg Show. Today, we have the honor of speaking with Jason Jean. Now, Jason is an incredible individual with an awesome, awesome background. He's been in the Air Force, stationed at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls, Montana, part of the 341st Security Forces Group. After he left the Air Force, his entrepreneurial spirit finally had a chance to break out, owning his own construction company. And he's been involved in tons of different enterprises like nightclubs, hotels, and alternative lifestyle events and cafes. He's really big on giving back to veterans. So he is now in the process of working with a roaster in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania to start a coffee line. That is called Tattered Beans. Totally veteran-owned, veteran-focused coffee company that gives back directly to the veterans. So, Jason, you've done a ton. I mean, your bio has definitely blown me away to the point where that intro didn't even cover the full extent of your awesomeness and your greatness. Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm definitely unique. You can say. I'm not shy to jump into a business that I've never done before and be like, hey, let's give it a shot.
That's fantastic, man. So thank you again for coming on the show. And again, thank you for agreeing to offer a super secret, very special, incredibly powerful bonus at the end of this show. For those who stick around, whether you're watching or listening, we have a very special gift for you, and it may or may not be involved with getting free coffee. So stick around, and if you skip all the way till the end, I'm gonna know. I'll find out. But stick around; it's gonna be a great show. So, with that said, Jason, what is your story?
Oh, where do you want me to start? Do you want me to give you the business side, the short version, the long version, the all about Tattered Beans? What do you want to hear?
Super long version from the very, very beginning.
I grew up in I would say lower middle class. Grew up in the Du Bois Town area outside Williamsport, Pennsylvania, where the Little League World Series is. That's the claim of fame for that area. Grew up in a household. I have an older brother, an older sister. I was the mistake of the family, although my mom says, no, you were not. You were playing. I'm like, no one plans a child 9 years after the last one. You know, unless you were completely drinking something and something was really bad. So I always tell her, no mental harm done. My dad was a welder, extremely hard worker. He was my hero growing up. I didn't really look at a lot of sports figures or anything like that as my person I looked up to. It was always my dad, and his work ethic. So I got his work ethic. And my mom was a hard worker. She worked in a factory. She was at times a stay at home mom, and they provided the best that they could for us. We didn't really want for anything. We didn't really ask because, we knew what we were given and we were appreciative for that. From there, I was your typical jock in school. So I applied myself about 1/10 of what I should have. I was a major pain in everyone's ass. You're going to get the straight truth from me. I mean, I did some, amazing stuff in high school. I led a sit-in, our senior year so that, that we could wear shorts because we couldn't wear shorts. And so I had the whole school go to the auditorium and I got 3 days in school suspension for that. But hey, the school after we graduate, they can still wear shorts, I was always proud of that. But, I had a couple of teachers that, really saw that I was a dreamer, we had a business situation. So in our school, You could be academic, where for all the smart kids, business, where people that didn't really want to really apply themselves academically and didn't want to go to tech school. So I was in the business area. And so one of our projects our senior year was to come up with our own little business, and our football team was really good that year. So I went to the local distributor and I got all the little white football helmets that you get out of the gumball machines. And because our football helmets were white. And then I went and got little stickers and put little S's on the side and little blue stripes. And, you know, you're looking at you, you're considerably younger than I am. So back in the day, you know, mom and dad's car, you know, the front hood ornament that, you know, sticks up, that was generally bolted on, and that was the radio. So I replaced all people. So I went and bought bolts and super glued them to the helmet. And then everyone had little South Williamsport football helmets on their cars. That was a business, and I was very successful at it, and I got a really good grade. So that was my real first entrepreneurial experience. And then from there, I went to college for football, broke my ankle, came back home, went back to bouncing at the bar. And one night, you know, after I got off work and a few bar fights, breaking them up, you know, my dad said, listen, you need to get your head out of your butt and you need to do something with your life. And there was the Air Force. So I went in the Air Force. I loved it. I loved the regiment. I loved the style. I loved everything about it. Went from there. I was a dorm chief down at Lackland. Went from dorm chief. I went to my tech school. I was Red Rope. So it just means you were the captain. And from there, I got stationed out in Great Falls, Montana. Blew out my knee, and I was given an opportunity. I wanted to be a lifer. Because I just loved the military and everything it was about. And unfortunately, with the destruction of my right knee, I was given the option of being a cook or admin. I couldn't go back to security police. So I was given the option of an honorable discharge. And so from that standpoint, you know, I had to, you know, pass on, you know. So, you know, that's what I ended up doing. And I met my wife there, and which was awesome. And that was super, super cool. And 25 years later, and two awesome kids, you know, here I am. And, you know, so I've had multiple businesses, like you said, from, you know, they started in construction. And I was able to fulfill one of my dreams. I wanted to be a millionaire by the time I was 30. And I reached that about 4 months into my 30th birthday, and then lost it, went bankrupt once, regained it back through my housing developments and that, and got into owning properties and made it again. And then I had a really bad accident. I almost died. I fell 22 feet, broke myself in half. And from that standpoint, I broke my pelvis, had a spinal cord injury. At that point I had went to my wife and said, I, you know, need to take some time off because, you know, as a father, you know, I chose the dollar, over the family. And so I was kissing my kid's head at 5 a.m. when I was leaving, you know, to go into the office and, you know, kissing them goodnight. And I wasn't really seeing them, and I was doing that for years. And so this was, you know, I was given another opportunity. So from that standpoint, we took some time off, went down to Key West, lived there for a few years, which was amazing, I have to say. And then got into another lucrative business doing large events and, you know, got back up on top and lost it again, you know. And there, I had a few attorney issues, you know, that made a few bad decisions for me and that I learned from. And so I now say the, you know, making it the third time is the best, you know. So what I've learned, you know, through all those ups and downs and being 47 years old is I've always been the dreamer, and I've always had the ability that my wife has always had the security of a job. And she's never wanted to work for me, no matter how much I've asked. She loves doing her job. And so she's always allowed me to take those chances. And when I take them, they're big. You know, I don't want to do anything small. And from that standpoint, it's, you know, you either make it or you don't. And, you know, a couple times, again, I had some bad information, and you learn from it, and you pick yourself back up and you dust yourself off. And then Tattered Beans came along, and I was diagnosed with cancer in September. And so I closed my cafe, and it had a coffee company already attached to it that we had come up with. And from there, you had spoken to Amanda, and you know, she's like my personal assistant, my right hand of, you know, things that I own. And I said, listen, I really want to rebrand this, and I want to do something for vets, you know, because we had done stuff for homeless vets through another company. And so she got me all the numbers, you know, we compiled everything. And I looked at what Gourmet Coffee is being sold online for and said, okay, we were previously selling our coffee at $8. Let's raise it to $12. And we'll give that $4 directly back to veterans on our website. So at that point, now I had to build a website. And in order to do that, how we do that is we take the veterans and active duty and first responders now, and they're the actual products. And the coffee is a subproduct. So when you come on Tattered Beans to buy your coffee because it's so good, you will physically pick someone to buy your coffee under. And then when you check out, that person that you bought your coffee under, they get direct profits sent right to them. And that's Tattered Beans. And that's my life in a quick synopsis.
Well, that's incredible. And
I'm unique. I've always said I'm very unique.
I wanna jump back into your childhood.
Yeah.
What did it smell like?
What did my childhood smell like? Well, we lived the Boys Town was on the side of a mountain, a little bit up off the river. So occasionally we would get the smell of the Susquehanna River. But, you know, it was, you know, my mom cooked. So I always remember having food, you know, all the time. It was, back then it was, she would make, like toasted bread with just mayonnaise on it. And that was like, you know, that was the best, you know, back then. So yeah, I mean, it was always food. My dad loved to cook. So he would always, when he wasn't traveling for work, he would come home and he would make, you know, something special. He always loved to make, you know, homemade egg rolls and stuff like that. So he loved to, you know, do stir fry and stuff. So yeah, I would have to say, you know, my childhood grew up smelling like food and all different kinds.
Why did you say that your father was the biggest role model for you growing up?
Because he wasn't around a lot. So back in that particular time, the nuclear power plants were big, and they were just being built. And so he was a welder. He was a steam fitter. And so the union, you know, that he worked for, he traveled a lot. So he was either up in New York or New Jersey or, you know, wherever the job took him. And in some cases, you know, depending on what part of the job they were on, they would work 7/12s. So I don't think that there's a better role model than somebody that's willing to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and to supply, you know, to supply an income for their family, and to have to feel that, you know, you can't be at things, you know, birthday parties or a baseball game. You know, there's a lot of baseball games that my dad had missed that I certainly don't hold against him comparative to, you know, what I think some people do. But from that standpoint, he was my role model. So I didn't look at, you know, I might have looked at a sports figure. So like when I was growing up, I wanted to be like Eric Dickerson because I wanted his face mask and his number and, you know, or Walter Payton, you know, things like that. But I didn't look at them as my role model. Or like I wanted to be a catcher like Thurman Munson, you know, things like that. But my dad and my mom, they were my role models for their work ethic.
When you were going through and building all of the different businesses and you had your ups, you had your downs, it seems like you built many successful organizations and had a lot of successful ventures. What do you think was the common thread between the success there? Like, how did you, I mean, a lot of people struggle to just get the success once, but you've done it multiple times. Like, how did you do it every time?
Don't quit. It's easy. People, and again, so when I was building them, you know, we didn't have the impatience that we do now. I mean, look at our cell phones. I mean, you know, you're constantly on it and you're expected to answer a text or a phone call right then and there, whether you're at dinner, your kid's game or something like that. You got to remember, so I started back in 1996, I think it was. 96 was my first business. So, you know, back then they didn't even have the bag phone yet, you know. So you're, you know, so when people were making phone calls, like you were getting done and then you were coming home and then making the phone calls to schedule your next day, your next day's meeting. So you were able to work all day and accomplish a lot more comparatively back then, to whereas now I have to split up my time into a lot of smaller projects, you know, to get everything done, you know, in the day. And then I have to learn to turn things off at a certain time. And I'm still learning that at times. So, even with Amanda, I try not to text after a certain time or, you know, I'm up at 4 a.m. I know she's not, you know, so I'm trying not to like send that text like, oh my God, I got this idea. And I'm like, I'm so excited. I want to, you know, text something. So a lot of times I'll send something through Instagram because I know that won't, you know, like buzz her phone or something like that, you know, just in case. So, but to back to your point, you know, I would say I made it because I didn't give up. When things were bad, yeah, certainly I had my down days and you know, I might have just sat like a zombie and just let my brain decompress to recharge. But I knew that, you know, as long as I was above ground, I could work that much harder the next day to try to make a new deal. Or, you know, to grow something or go get another job or, you know, work on another business or something. I knew as long as, again, that I was above ground, I had that ability. So a lot of entrepreneurs now that I talk to and mentor, I'm still like, they want everything now. Like, and then they have to realize that most of the stuff on Instagram is so full of crap that you can't have this false vision of this person, you know, and everyone's like, well, I want to be like this. Don't be like that. Be better than that. Like be yourself, but be better, you know? And I'm like, and that's going to take time. you know, I bought my dream car, was a Maserati. So I don't know. Did you ever watch The Sopranos?
Sorry, I really didn't.
Okay. So The Sopranos, there was a one episode where there was this Johnny Sack got a Maserati. And I saw that and just fell in love with it. And I looked at my wife and I said, that's my dream car. And I got it at 47, you know, because that's when I knew I could just get it. You know, I didn't have to worry about everything. And so I got it. And that was my, you know, my dream car. Well, what I try to teach the 30-year-old person is like, you got to give it time. you know, if it takes 10 or 15 years to be able to finally get that car, work towards that, you know, set your micro goals. You know, if that's your overall goal, set smaller goals in order to achieve that. And so I learned that. And, you know, that's the advice that I give young entrepreneurs now, is you can't expect to make it tomorrow. Like, it's going to take time.
So now that you have really focused in on Tattered Beans, like, what do you see as the, like what's the mechanism? What does it look like? How do things run? How did you get things up and running? Like, take us through the nitty gritty of the business.
Well, I think, you know, so I'm not big on business plans, because that's, at the end of the day, it's just, you know, words on paper. I do more of an outline, you know, so I can see the structure. I can move things around, you know, as I need to. Nothing's set in stone when you're a business person. Like, you got to be able to roll with the punches. And for Tattered Beans, I had, you know, it's never been done. And people are telling me that, and I know it wasn't, because I researched it. It's a completely different animal that I'm doing. Whereas we're physically giving cash back to people that people are shopping under, you know, they don't, you know, so you look at all the multi-level marketing scams out there, you know, wrapping Saran wrap around your belly and telling people you're going to lose weight. And, oh my God, I can go on and on and on. But those people have to physically invest in product, and then they have to try to resell it. With us, with Tattered Beans, those vets, active duty and first responders on the website, they don't have to buy a thing. I'm giving them a free way to make money. They don't have to buy any inventory. They don't have to do anything. They get a link. You can post that link wherever you want. Tell as many people, go to this link and buy coffee under me, and sit back and collect money. Because for me, my thought process is in that specific arena, they're very underpaid. And I knew it, because I was one at one time. And I have friends who are in the first responder and active duty arenas now, and they're very underpaid for what they do. I mean, you look at your firefighters and police officers and EMTs and the amount of hours they work and overtime they work and putting their lives on the line. And an EMT, if I'm not mistaken, is making anywhere from between $16,000 to $19,000 a year. People at McDonald's are making more than that right now. And they're serving a burger, you know, and usually wrong. So let's be honest, you know, with Tattered Beans, I can bridge that gap a little bit, and not a penny comes out of their pocket. So I think from that standpoint, it's, you know, figuring out my outline and what my overall objective is. So my overall objective was getting money back to vets and active duty and first responders. So now I have to say, how can I do that? Well, I know that I don't want to invest a ton of money into warehousing, brand new roasters, and teaching myself how to roast. So what's the next easiest way to do it? Well, I'll go find a roaster who's been very successful and who's willing to co-package with me. Then you sit down, you negotiate. This is what we should be able to do a year. You have a pricing structure set to whereas it will fluctuate, you know, so that as our numbers go up, their numbers go down, so that, you know, more money can flow our way. So once you get that all in line, then you have to then figure out, how am I going to sell the product? Well, I have to build a website. How am I going to build the website? So I have it in my head on how it should work. Then you have to go find a platform that can make your dream come true. And then comes the marketing portion of it. And that's the toughest part, at least for us, because we're dealing with people who, from an ego side of things, are very strong people. So they don't ever want to let on that they're hurting or they need help or anything like that, because they're strong. They're strong people mentally in that. So from a marketing standpoint, we have to explain to these people, like, listen, yes, it's a donation project for us, for, you know, the way we describe it in the company wise, but it's a business to you. Like, this is an income to you. So we have to re-educate our consumers and our participants that this is a business, you know, for them, and they can make money off of this. And once you get that and you put it all into a bowl and mix it all up, it turns out to be a pretty good little dinner that you can put together, you know? I mean, because everybody enjoys it. You know, people are buying coffee, it's good coffee, and it's going, they're helping someone else out. So it's a feel good, taste good type of thing. The people that are receiving the money, you know, from it, you know, again, it's maybe coming at a time where, you know, maybe it will be Christmas, when Christmas comes around and people are buying coffee, and the next thing you know, we're cutting checks for, you know, a couple of $100 extra. Well, that buys Christmas presents, or, you know, maybe it buys snow tires, or pays an electric bill, or, you know, buys the Christmas trees, or maybe it buys a dinner out with the family that normally they wouldn't have. So it's a whole lot of goodness, you know, going on.
That is brilliant and impactful in society. Like, I truly think you're tapping into something, and I'm sure you know way better than I do, but like, that's going to make a huge difference to so many people, because it's almost like everybody needs coffee. And I mean, you know, veterans who deserve the world for doing so much for, you know, normal people like me. Like, I'm incredibly grateful to have somebody that I know be like, hey, you know, great coffee, it's for a good cause, and I actually get, you know, I get, like, support me, you know, through this. Like, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. So let's say somebody's listening and watching right now, and they're like, okay, just from a business perspective, like, that's a brilliant way to model, because you're almost incentivizing the people you're working with, like your partners, the veterans, to share. And it's like a viral effect almost. How can they add that into their business? Like, how do you incorporate that, more of that, into your own business?
As far as them, well, a lot of these men and women, you know, they're not business owners. So we're educating them. I get a lot of DMs with, hey, I just signed up, you know, what should I do with my link now? And how do I track things? You know, so I'm giving them ideas. You know, in that aspect, you know, it's about, you know, going to work, you know, talking to your friends, your families, you know, people that, you know, drink coffee, who aren't going through the drive-through, who make it at home. You know, like, talk to these people, like, now I'm a very, you know, outward person. So, I just go up and randomly talk to people. Like, if you look at my Instagram, you know, I openly just go up to talk to people at the gym and take a picture with them and, you know, tell their story. And so for me, like, I love talking about something that I'm passionate about. So we try to get those people as passionate about it as we are, so that they can go out and they can sell it. And I'm very honest, like, we are a for-profit business. And the reason we are is because I don't believe in the 501c3 model in all aspects. It does some really good things, and there's some really great organizations out there. But for me, for what we wanted to do, I would rather be more transparent and say, listen, we sell a bag of coffee for $12. Four of it goes right to the vet or whoever you bought it under. We take $1. That's what we run the company on. We run it on $1. The rest is all based, you know, all associated with cost. So if we can, if we sell 1 million bags of coffee, which we will, that means the company would have made $1 million and I gave $4 million back to veterans. Pretty good deal. And I wonder why more Fortune 500 don't do that. It baffles me. because I know of a coffee company that could easily have done something like this. Because, and they have what, 30,000, you know, kiosks or stores or whatever. Why aren't they donating a dollar back to this or that? And they don't, because, you know, it would make some of their people mad. So it's easier for them to say, like, well, we donate to this organization and only a percentage of it goes. So it's just a different business model. You know, at 47 years old and when you have cancer, you generally don't have to answer to anyone else other than yourself. So I get to, you know, do what I want to do. And if I, you know, choose to run my business the way I run it, you know, and give back the amount of money that I give back, well, then guess what? It's my business.
So if somebody's thinking like, this is amazing, I definitely need to be getting involved, doing something to help, like, how can somebody help your business, work with your business to do more for veterans?
Well, I love, if you look at our website, like, I love working with other veteran organizations and veteran owned businesses. So we love partnering up and promoting other people. Like, we just signed on as an ally this craftsman who builds these incredible, I don't want to say trinkets, but like flags and all this other stuff and tables, and he's a vet, but his work is just next level. And it was crazy. And so we had received a message from someone else about him, and I saw his work and personally reached out and said, listen, can I put you on our allies page? Like, I want to get you as much business, because we get a ton of hits on our website. I said, I want to get you as much business as possible. Like, I'll put you on our Instagram. We'll put you as our allies page. You know, like, you don't have to buy any coffee from us or anything like that. Like, I just want to help you. And so we've been very successful with that. And we're starting our own blog to feature other veteran owned businesses that we work with and tell their story. You know, that's one positive way that we can help other vets grow their business. And because, again, you know, man, I'm so much older than a lot of them. So I have that business experience that I can mentor a lot of people, and through, you know, Instagram's really been huge to allow, you know, people to reach out to me, to, you know, DM me, ask me questions. I was just, you know, talking to a young vet the other day, and, you know, he's telling me, oh, I got this business. He goes, I'm so busy. And I'm like, well, being busy, isn't it good? You know, you want to be making money. So I would probably like dump whatever business isn't making you money, you know, because it's just dragging you down. And he texts me, you know, he messaged me like 3 days later. He said, yep, I dumped this business. And oh my God, I got so much time to focus on the one that's making money. Thank you so much. And, you know, I was trying to divide my money up and I just couldn't get my t-shirt thing off the ground. And, you know, and I was spending so much money because somebody would buy a couple t-shirts and I would run out of that, but I'd have to buy another 50, you know, to bring the cost down. And, you know, so it was really good to hear, you know, that giving that advice, you know, really helped.
So let's take a business like Project Egg, okay, right? And, you know, we have the show, published content, hopefully to attract people back to the website, where I can provide more value, you know, by giving extra content. And then, you know, if there are a few products on the store, but a lot of the revenue comes from the advertising and building the list, right?
Yep.
So how would you add in, because it seems like one of the foundations of what you're doing is having a for cause element to the business. How would you add that into Project Egg? Like, how how would you bring that cause to Project Egg?
Well, you have to, what are you passionate about?
Entrepreneurship and personal development.
So, I mean, that's a pretty wide spectrum of things, because there's a lot of, you know, I mean, even I have a life coaching background, and, you know, so you know, everything on Instagram is motivational. I'm going to copy this motivational thing, and I'm going to put it in my story. I'm going to put it on my page, and I'm going to tell everyone I'm so motivated, and, you know, and they're broke. And so where can you monetize, you know, this motivation, we'll say. And from there, you have to find something that you're passionate in. And so you're very young. So when you would talk to someone of my age, I would look at it like, what do you bring to the table from that aspect? So you would really have to pitch me really hard on what experiences in life that you have gone through that could help educate me. And the difference between myself and other entrepreneurs is that I have learned to set my ego aside. And so whether I'm talking to someone in their 80s or someone in their 20s, I'm still going to sit and listen. And I'm going to learn and something from that person. And maybe it's something from the 80-year-old that's like, save your money, you know, for a rainy day, or something that's so old school. And the 20-year-old that's a new entrepreneur is definitely going to teach me something that's probably more internet driven, marketing, what social norms are changing, and things like that, that maybe I don't follow as the 47-year-old. Certainly you guys are more up on, you know, new apps that are out and stuff like that. Hell, I can barely even get my iPhone to do some of the things it's supposed to do, you know, because I don't focus on that. And that's, you know, and as an entrepreneur, I admit that. So I try to circle myself with smart people like yourself in those arenas. And then I bring what I'm great at in my arena. And then we, you know, we go over on this side too. And we try to mold those all into one, you know, perfect, you know, scenario. And so from your aspect, it's trying to find your niche. It's trying to find your niche that everybody's trying to do. And from there, find what you're great at. And that's what you really have to pitch. Because too many young entrepreneurs think they have to, you know, they're throwing a million different things at the wall. And, you know, that's not necessarily how you're going to find success. It's throw it at the wall because that's what you're passionate about. Because if you're passionate about it, you're going to know everything about it. Like, you're going to know that business inside and out. And then other people, you become that guru that people go to. But the problem is people don't do that. They because they want the most successful podcast right now. They don't understand it's going to take 174 shows, you know, or 252. They don't understand that it's going to take a ton of time of editing it. They want to pay someone to help edit it because they're busy. You know, I've got meetings. You know, oh my God, that kills me when people say that. I've got meetings. Really? What's the meeting about? Because let me tell you, I'm successful and I take a lot of phone meetings, but I'm not in sitting down just shooting the breeze. Like, if we're going to sit down, my time is very valuable. So I will tell you, like, if you want to go have a beer, which I don't drink, and I'll drink water, but if we want to go and in that arena, then I'll know what that type of arena is set at. This meeting, I know what this meeting is about. So people, unfortunately, take a lot of meetings that are just fluff, but, quote, they're taking meetings. So I would say take more meaningful meetings and get rid of the fluff.
So it seems like for people who haven't quite found it. They haven't quite found the success. They haven't made it yet. It seems like some of the best advice that I'm hearing is to niche down into what are you the absolute best at? What can you teach? What can you do for somebody? Stop taking fluff meetings. Like, take responsibility of the value of your time, and then find a way to work with other people to leverage both your strengths and their strengths to build partnerships that will help you flourish. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Absolutely. You nailed it right on the head. It's an old adage, but why do you want to reinvent the wheel? You know, listen, the chance of everybody wants to be the next Bill Gates. Everybody wants, they think they're going to be the next big internet star. And I equate it to my youngest daughter's Division I field hockey player. And you look at a Division I athlete, and they're 1% of college athletes, 1%. NFL players want, you know, less than 1% make it to the NFL. Less than 1% make it to the professional, to the big leagues in any professional sport. How many billionaires are there in the world? How many, you know, so see my point? You know, so your chances of getting to that level is like winning the lottery. It really is. So that's fine if you have that as your main goal. Like, I want to be a billionaire. Make that as your main goal. But dude, you better have a whole bunch of micro goals, you know, that you need to achieve to get to there. But here's the problem. No one makes those micro goals. So they start a business and they say, I want to be a millionaire. But they don't realize everything that takes in the middle. And so when the first setback comes, they quit. The majority of them quit. First time they get someone, you know, life socks them in the face and business socks them in the face and they're laying down and they're holding their belly. A lot of them don't get up and dust themselves off. And that's the saddest part, you know, because if they would have set smaller goals to get to that main goal, that failure wouldn't have been so bad. And they would have dusted themselves off and would have made to the next goal, you know, because they would have realized that, hey, this is just a setback. You know, I can keep going. And a lot of them don't, you know, and that's probably the saddest part that I run into with a lot of business people is like, listen, don't give up. You know, and check your ego sometimes. I get that a lot, you know, with these younger, especially on Instagram. I've had to educate a lot of people, you know, who call themselves influencers. It's like, dude, you're broke. Like, it's great that you have like a couple hundred thousand followers, but and you're comparing your followers to my little bit of followers and you're thinking like, oh, I'm better, but see my point? So it's really checking your ego at the door too. And once you think you're too big to work with the smaller guys, then that's when you've lost it. Like, don't ever forget where you came from. And that's, at least with me, I love giving young people chances in, you know, to become an entrepreneur. I invest in a lot of young people. I get burned a lot, you know, and it happens. And so again, in those situations, it doesn't scare me off to, you know, dump another 40 or 50 grand into another young person to give them a shot. But I, you know, my attorney might, you know, word it a little different, you know, the next time, but it doesn't scare me to not invest and keep going, and hopefully, giving someone else the ability to live their dream, you know, or their passion, and backing them and giving them the mentorship to grow.
What is your philosophy on developing deep, meaningful, and genuine connection with another person?
Oh, man, it's funny you ask that. So I'm a super friendly person. Until you wrong me, and then I'm not as friendly. But going into every situation, like, I want to be your friend. Like, I just want to, like, I want to hang out. I want to I text you. I want to be your buddy. And I understand that, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't have that mentality. But I think from a business side, at least with me, like my partners are my friends. And I would be there, you know, I'd take a bullet for them. I would, you know, they ever call me, like I'm there. It's not even a question. And, you know, from that standpoint, you know, man, I just wish more people thought like that. But unfortunately, again, you know, we get these damn, you know, these damn things, you know, they're just, they're so bad, you know, because they've made things and the realism of friendships and the realisms of business and the realisms of life so fake. And so you get these people, again, you know, so we use Instagram a lot, but any really social media platform, we get these people who have this falseness of, you know, I'm so successful. And I mean, how bad is it? And let me ask you a question. How bad is it when there's businesses that are successful renting out a sports car so people can take pictures with it? How bad is it that a business is profitable when they rent out their plane so people can take pictures in it? Are you serious? Have we really gone to that level of fakeness so that people can put on these charades for people? It's like, I feel sorry for people, you know, because it was funny. I had Andy Faresla had put up something on his Instagram, and I had commented on it today and messaged him and said, man, I was preaching that back in 2006. I love hearing it, you know, and it was about not being liked by 100% of anybody. And I've been preaching that to, you know, so long, you know, and that I stopped when we would move to a new town and maybe I have too many tattoos or I didn't own a business that people agreed with. And I got sick of wanting the Joneses, no offenses to any, you know, real Joneses out there. It's just a fake name. I got sick of the Joneses, you know, it putting up to see if I, you know, if they're going to like me or not, only to be talked about by the Joneses behind my back. So I stopped caring. And man, when I stopped caring, man, life was really easy. It turned out to be really easy. And so all the young entrepreneurs, I would say, you know, just be yourself. I mean, I would rather, as a business person, have someone come up to me and say, listen, Jason, I'm really good at this, but I haven't had a chance, but I could help you with this. And I would give that person a chance over someone I would catch being fake. And I tell people, like, I'll give you an example. Somebody had pitched me, they wanted to do my internet marketing. And so when you pitch me, man, you better have all your ducks in a row. And so, he pitched me and I said to him, I said, well, you know, thanks for the pitch. I said, but did you do your research? And he said, yeah. And I said, really? And I'm very brutally honest. And I said, well, I said, I'm going to tell you you're full of crap. I said, because right on my Instagram, which is open, you would have clearly saw what this particular thing that you wrote in your email, we don't do. I said, so you didn't do your research. And for that, I can't work with you. And so I had to call my friend back who had, you know, mentioned about him. And he said, man, he goes, I warned him. He goes, I told him you were a straight shooter. And I told him he better do all his homework. And I gave him all your pages and everything. And the guy just gave me a basic pitch that he would give to everybody. So he didn't take the time to find out what Tattered Beans was about. He didn't take the time to find out how it works or you know, the different layers of it. And, so for me, it was like, man, you could have had a really good deal here in a marketing deal, but you just didn't take that extra time. You just gave me the same pitch that you gave everybody. And I think that's extremely negative for anyone. If anyone's, you know, when people are listening to this, if you're going to pitch somebody, take the time to get to know them and look at their social media, find out the type of person and people they are, find out the things that they like, make the situation personable. That's one thing like Amanda and I talk about all the time is, you know, make your emails personable. Make them, you know, the day and the age of the, you know, the email that is just a blanket email, that's over. You know, people want to know that, you know, who you are and come from a personal, more personal standpoint. And please, you know, tell me what you think. I mean, because that's what I'm seeing the trends with. A lot more people I'm getting on the phone with because they can see me on Instagram and they feel like they have more of a connection to me personally. So they may not send an email to the company or they may not call the company phone, but they'll DM me because they want to hear from me personally. And I love that. I have no problem with that whatsoever. And I answer all my DMs personally. And, you know, so that gives them a feeling like, wow, I actually talked to the owner or I talked to this guy. And so it's a level of comfort and knowing that, you know, some of those messages, you know, maybe they didn't believe, you know, they didn't like the gun in the picture or, you know, maybe that I'm, you know, doing something that they don't approve of. And I say, listen, I apologize, but I don't apologize because I know that, you know, I do this for me. This is my personal Instagram. So if I like this, this is, you know, but thank you very much for your message and, you know, have a great day. And I'm very positive with it. But again, it goes back to, I'm not going to be liked by 100% of anybody.
You know, it's interesting you say that people kind of crave that personal touch because, oh, yeah. You know, I was just talking to my uncle. He works with an oil tool rental company or so, I don't know the proper way to say that, but they rent oil tools to other companies. And he's worked there for years and years and years. And he actually got a job from my pawpaw, his dad. And my pawpaw was awesome, man. Like he was a veteran as well. He was the top seller in the company by far. Like my uncle was telling me that my pawpaw was responsible for about 60% of the sales done in North America, which is just nuts. Like in the United States, it was insane. Anyways, what he said was that the critical piece, how he was able to do that was he made people like him and he could build that genuine connection. Yep. And he said that he won business. My uncle said that my pawpaw won business every time. Not because of price, not because of some technical thing, but because the decision maker loved him and wanted to do business with him and knew that my pawpaw would take care of him.
Yep.
And that was, I mean, probably what 40, 50 or, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago now that all this is happening. So it's interesting. It almost seems like we've now gone back to that as what people prefer. Maybe we never left.
Oh no, we left. When was the last time you could get anyone to even answer a phone call with a company? Yeah, no, I do think we left. I think we become such an automated situation scenario for companies. And listen, I get it because of the bottom line. Again, I get to control my bottom line, so I get if I want to talk to people or not. You know, I take that on. And unfortunately, you know, listen, I get that the bigger companies like, you know, Google can't have an online phone. I can't even imagine what they would be, you know, the things they would get. And I get, you know, some businesses can't, they're just too big. But at least for us and maybe the size of your pop-ups company that he worked for, back then in that day, you know, people did, they did business on handshakes. They did business because they liked the person so much. They did business because they knew that if something went wrong and that delivery wasn't there, they were going to call your papa, right?
Oh yeah.
And he was going to fix it. Whether he had to load it in his car and drive it to them, that's what he was going to do. And you know what that comes down to? Customer service. So not only was he a great salesperson, but he was also great at customer service. And so many businesses have failed at that. Good example, you know, a young man had just, he had ordered a hat and t-shirt online. And it was, you know, it was a glitch in our system that didn't have it unavailable because our the stuff's on back order. And so, you know, when he ordered it and it came through, we had to message him and we said, hey, unfortunately, it's our fault. So we're going to send you some swag for our error along with your coffee. And then when your other stuff comes in, we will send that also. And he was extremely appreciative, you know, for that. But you know what? That's the right thing to do. And do you want me to tell you why? Because listen, if we keep him as a great customer and he goes and he has a profile and he goes and he sends his link out to everybody, the $3 t-shirt or the $5 t-shirt that I'm going to give to him will outweigh and produce way more from him. But if I'm greedy and I sit there and say, unfortunately, you're going to have to wait 3 to 4 weeks for your product. Sorry about the situation. We'll send you your coffee. And I don't do anything. You really think he's going to really be like, push? Exactly. So too many people don't look at the big picture. And I had the luxury of meeting somebody pretty cool at a very young age. And he said, you know, boys, he called us boys because we were being recruited for football. He said, boys, don't ever trip over the nickel to get to the quarter. And when I heard that, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever, dude. And from that standpoint, fast forward to my age now, I'm like, wow, that really makes a lot of sense. So in that situation that I just told you, I can't trip over the nickel to get to the quarter. I got to pick up that nickel, and that nickel is that t-shirt. Send that young kid, you know, a couple swag things. Send 10 bucks. Give him $10 worth of stuff and apologize. Say, listen, for our error, this is what we're doing for you. And that's the right – and it's not that it's – you know, I'm looking at it from a financial standpoint. It's just the right thing to do. And by doing the right thing, we will gain a friend – and a confidant for a very long time out of that.
And like, it is the right thing to do. Absolutely. But in the long run, like financially, that makes way more sense to do, because like you said, you give them the $10 of swag. And then for the next 10 years, that person's going to remember that. That person's going to remember that for sure. Yep. So, man, I'm so glad that you said that, and you know, I really do appreciate the time that we've been able to share on the interview so far. You know,
thank you.
I want to thank you. Just have a few more questions for you, then we'll wrap up and we'll give everybody their freebie. I want to know, what is your greatest theory?
My greatest theory. Wow, that's a good one. Work hard till you die. I guess that'd be a saying. What's my greatest theory? Oh, you stumped me. I don't know. What's your greatest theory?
Well, my greatest theory is that there's nothing distinguishable between people like us and somebody like Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, that we can do literally anything that we want to do on the planet because we have the same 7 billion people on the earth to do it with. We have the same 24 hours in a day, and like what matters is what we do in that day. So like, I mean, it may sound kind of cliche, but I literally think that the only thing that is stopping us from turning our dreams into reality is how much we believe in those dreams, how much we go for them.
Well, I guess my theory would be, you know, you live your dreams and you'll conquer your goals. I had a cheerleading gym, and my kids cheered at that when I lived in Key West, and that was one of my sayings. Because at the end of the day, you know, you have to, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to be a dreamer, and you have to set goals as those, and as you continually to dream, you know, you'll meet your goals overall. And at least for me, I have. I will definitely say I've learned over time, and things that I teach to the young entrepreneurs now is set more realistic goals to start. You know, you're not going to, you know, get your Lamborghini, you know, your first year in business. I mean, I guess you might, you know, I mean, but guess what? You'd be that 1%, you know, that could do it. So that would be my theory is, you know, live your dreams and conquer your goals.
Is there anything about yourself that you think is an important part of who you are that we didn't talk about today? In other words, what did I miss?
I would think you got to be honest with yourself. You're younger, you know. So I, you know, my oldest daughter is 22, and she's just had her first child. So I'm, you know, I'm a pop myself. And I have a younger daughter who's 19, and like I was telling you know, she goes to Wake Forest and plays field hockey. And I think as a parent, and as a lot of your listeners might be younger and beginning into that, the best advice I can give you about myself is you gotta own your shit at some point in time. And so early on as a father, you know, I made, you know, some grave errors, you know, the way I parented. And so like I told you from my accident, you know, if I would have died on that day, I mean, what would my kids have remembered, you know, spending an hour? And I'm not joking when I say this, maybe an hour or two in an entire week. You know, because I was, you know, I was gone Saturday, Sundays, you know, I was on the phone, and, you know, I might have been, you know, home, but I was locked in my office, and I was like, you know, be quiet, you know, I'm on the phone with somebody. And, you know, because I was chasing that seven digits. And so for me, any advice and for people to know me is that at some point in time, in the last few years, I had to own my shit with my kids, and I had to sit down and apologize and say, man, you know, I wish I would have been a better father. I wish I would have. Now, I didn't miss things. I went to all their events. And out of all those years, I missed one for each of them. And, but, you know, just be a parent, you know, and I think what's frustrating that I hear so many of these, I won't call anyone out by name, but he's a fairly large, marketing or internet presence, but you know, he sits there and says, you know, you got to work 24/7, and that's so full of crap. It's not funny, because, you know, unless you're an international company, everyone sleeps at some point in time. And the best advice that I can give on hearing someone else say that is that it's whether you work 24/7, it's still going to take you years and years and years to build that business. So why don't you work like 16/7 or 14/7 or even 7/12 like my dad, and give back to your family. So what I've learned to do is I do work 16, 18 hour days, but I take pockets of time throughout the day. And whether it's, if my daughter calls, I take the call, unless I'm on your podcast. And then Amanda takes it and says he'll call back. But no, in all seriousness, take that call, take that lunch with them, take that 1 or 2 hours in that day. You can still work 18 hours, but take that 1 or 2 and give it to the proper scenarios that you're supposed to. So your family, you know, your family, your family. Because listen, at the end of the day, if you're not happy and you're lonely, that causes a lot of stress. And then businesses, you know, they fail for that, you know, because your mind is so, you're so focused on the business, and other things are failing over here. And when they fail, it's going to cause drama in your business. It's inevitable, right?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, why not, you know, what are you gaining from working 24/7? You're not gaining anything. All you're going to gain is failure at other things. And, you know, so there is a happy medium. So you can still work a lot of hours and then fit in other things. You just got to be better at scheduling.
So, Jason, I want to thank you again so much for coming on the show. It has truly, truly been a pleasure and an honor to share this time with you. And I want to thank you very much.
No, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
So one more question for you, and then let's tell people about the freebie. You know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, looking back and you know, you mentioned a couple of times, you know, what advice you had for younger people. But for me specifically, right, I have the show, I have a couple other businesses on the side, and I'm 24 years old. What should I be asking you, somebody with your experience, with your knowledge, with your your journey, what should I personally be asking you specifically that I just wouldn't think to ask?
I think all businesses are basically the same, a lot of them. You know, you might be making, you know, widgets over here and one might be a restaurant and all that, but all businesses ultimately all have common denominators. You got to have a good work ethic. You got to generally have a really good personality. Most successful people are dreamers, and they will put in whatever they believe in the process, and they believe in them, and they believe in what they are doing. And so my advice to you in your success is give it time, because you are in that generation of people, and not necessarily you, but people in general, they're not used to having to wait for things. And they go and do stupid stuff thinking that they'll get more followers and things like that. And, you know, for me, I've learned that give things time. Time is of the essence. Like, that is, you know, so important. Like, you have to get things done now, but you have to understand the things that you're doing now is going to take time for your success, you know, in the future. So just time. And I think you guys look over that too much. And you expect, you know, why am I, good example, you know, why am I only getting, I had asked this on to Amanda, we made a joke because I had one picture that got like 1600 likes and I had another one that had like 400. Like, why? You know, and the thing is that you have to learn to control the controllables, right? The things that are out of your control, which is social media, You can't control that. So what you can control, though, are boots on the ground. So keep working with, you know, people like me and the next person and the next person, and you'll gain a few more followers from me and the next person and the next person. And you keep doing those things. And the next thing you know, you will be, you know, you're going to be huge. You're already successful, but you'll even be more successful. And people forget that. So they think by, as you and I had talked earlier, you know, those numbers, you know, of followers or likes or comments, listen, it's not controllable. You don't control that, people. You know, Instagram does, Facebook does. And if you're, you know, what are you going to do? Pay $35 for every boost. And that's just going to boost technically to your same people. It's not like it's sending it to new people. It's just sending it to the people that already like you. But that's how they make money. So it's not a controllable, right? We can't control that. But you can control, you know, going out and going to the, you know, the local pub and handing out your card and say, hey, have you ever listened to my show? I do a podcast show. And being confident that you could go up to a random person and give them a card and say, hey, listen to my show. I'm pretty cool. It's a pretty cool show. Are you an entrepreneur? Start talking to somebody. You never, and but how many people do that? How many people randomly go up to a random stranger and say, hi, I'm Jason, and I own Tattered Beans. And Tattered Beans is this. I do it every day on my Instagram.
Awesome.
I go up and I introduce myself to someone completely random, and I make a new friend. So when I walk in that gym or I go somewhere, you know, I know somebody. And here's the funny thing. We were down at Wake Forest, and my wife and my daughter at Target, and I didn't want to shop with them. So I'm sitting in the parking lot, and there were two police officers there. And so I got out of the car and walked up to the guy's window and knocked on it. And he turned and looked at me, and he put it down. And he goes, what? And I said, you know, so I put my hands up first, and I said, this is going to be really random. I said, but my name's Jason, and I own Tattered Beans. It's a veteran-owned coffee company that we give back to veterans, active duty, and first responders. Can I talk to you about it? And he looks at me and goes, okay. So then I shook his hand, and then I sat and talked to him for about 45 minutes. And, you know, I explained everything, and he goes, I definitely, you know, when are you going to back down? So him and he has my number now, and now we text, and you know, so I'm, you know, but here's the thing, you know, out of sight, out of mind, you know, he still has to get, you know, signed up on the website. But are how many people are confident in themselves to just randomly walk up to people and say hello? Hell, I don't even know half my neighbors around me, you know, but back in the day when I grew up, you know, everyone was outside and you were playing with the neighbor kids and you were doing all this and all the neighbors knew each other and, you know, you had the neighbor block party and, but you know, that doesn't happen as easy now. So my advice for you would be to give it time, but be super open as a person and just randomly go up and to talk to people and talk to them about you and let them talk to you about them. And then you make a new connection, a new friend. And you know what? You never know where that will go. But if you don't ask, you don't know, do you?
Dude, that's awesome advice. That's cool. That could almost be like one of those challenges, like meet one new person every single day. Go introduce yourself randomly to one person every single day. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome, man. So again, thank you so much for coming on the show. To everybody who's watching, listening, thank y'all so much for sticking with us the whole time. And if you skipped from the beginning, I see you. I know that you skipped all the way here. It's all right. I still love y'all too. So now I want to tell y'all about the super secret, extra special, bona fide, never before on this show seen special thing. Jason, you want to tell him what it is?
So listen, because he is so awesome and had me on the show and let me talk and ramble on and about Tattered Beans in my life, we're going to do a promo called Project Egg. And so when you buy a bag of coffee under one of our vets, active duty veterans or first responders, we're going to, and you put in the product code Project A, you're going to get a free bag.
That is awesome. So you're saying buy one bag of coffee, support a veteran, get a second bag of coffee totally free.
Yep.
That's cool. Thank you very much for that. So if y'all want to go and pick that up, which I highly, highly encourage you to do, head on over to projectdig.co/Gene, as in Jason's last name, Gene, J-E-A-N, projectdig.co/Gene. Go grab your free bag of coffee. Buy one, get one, totally free, supporting some veterans, being awesome. Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you to everybody who's listening. Let's change the world.
Thank you.
Hey, y'all. Ben here. Thank you so, so much for sticking with me all the way till the end of the episode. Now, it means a lot that you're here, but I want to ask you to take it one step further and head on over to iTunes, leave a review, and subscribe to the show. Please, please, please go to iTunes, write a review, and subscribe to the show. That's what helps us move the needle forward and reach more people. Thank you very much, and I'll see you on the next episode.